World health officials say they warned of the coming pandemic 3 months ago, and Governor Cuomo slams anti-lockdown protesters. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with some of the news for Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. And Iran's Revolutionary Guard launched its first satellite into space today, dramatically revealing what experts described as a secret military space program. The Guard said it put the Noor, meaning light, satellite into low orbit circling the Earth. The United States refused to confirm if the satellite actually achieved orbit, but Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's criticism of the launch implied it had succeeded.
The IRGC, a designated terrorist organization, launched a missile today. When you talk about the UN Security Council Resolution 2231, I think every nation has an obligation to go to the United Nations and evaluate whether this missile launch was consistent with that Security Council resolution. I don't think it remotely is, and I think Iran needs to be held accountable for what they've done. They've now had a military organization that the United States has designated terrorists attempt to launch a satellite. You talked about the naval ships. You saw the president's statement this morning. The president's been very clear to the Department of Defense and frankly to the State Department team too, to do everything we need to do to make sure that we protect and defend our officers, our military officers, our diplomats around the world, to continue to ensure that they are secure and safe. What he said this morning and what I know he's told all of us in leadership inside the government is to take whatever action is necessary.
The launch comes after tense encounters between U.S. warships and Iranian gunboats in recent weeks. In response, Trump had tweeted this morning, "I have instructed the United States Navy to shoot down and destroy any and all Iranian gunboats if they harass our ships at sea." Following Trump's tweet, an Iranian Armed Forces spokesperson said the U.S. should focus on saving its military from the coronavirus. The United States Navy has reported 26 ships with current coronavirus outbreaks and another 14 where the sailors have recovered. There are currently 90 ships at sea with no reported cases, and the Navy has 297 active-duty warships. Nearly 3,600 U.S. service members have tested positive for the virus, including two deaths. Nearly 800 of those cases came from the outbreak aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt aircraft carrier, where one sailor also died. Iran says it's not trying to build nuclear weapons. Maintaining its satellite launches and rocket tests are for civilian purposes only. Over the past decade, Iran has sent several short-lived satellites into orbit and in 2013 launched a monkey into space. And President Trump is already backpedaling what he described as a temporary suspension of immigration into the United States. Trump said Tuesday he would put a 60-day pause on issuing green cards to limit competition for jobs, adding the order would include certain exemptions. Trump's order doesn't affect hundreds of thousands of foreign workers with non-immigrant visas, including farm workers, healthcare workers, and software programmers. Thousands of foreign-born healthcare workers are currently treating people with COVID-19 and working in critical sectors of the economy. And the United States is reporting more COVID-19 cases than any other country in the world, with more than 825,000 infected. But the COVID-19 is spreading to less developed countries as well. As the White House backs away from supporting the World Health Organization, last week, Trump ordered a pause in paying an installment of the nearly $900 billion the U.S. gives the WHO every year. Secretary of State Pompeo says the 60- to 90-day pause in funding is a result of an investigation into what he says was the organization's failure to report on allegations the Chinese Communist Party had withheld crucial data on the emerging pandemic.
Even after the CCP did notify the WHO of the coronavirus outbreak, China didn't share all of the information it had. Instead, it covered up how dangerous the disease is. It didn't report sustained human-to-human transmission for a month until it was in every province inside of China. It censored those who tried to warn the world. It ordered a halt to testing of new samples, and it destroyed existing samples. The CCP still has not shared the virus sample from inside of China with the outside world, making it impossible to track the disease's evolution. Not making a legal determination here today on China's adherence to the IHRs, but the World Health Organization's regulatory arm clearly failed during this pandemic.
WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom says the allegations are unfounded.
We declared the emergency at the right time. And when the world had enough time to respond when the rest of the world had enough time to respond. I repeat again, there were only 82 cases and no deaths. That was enough to cut it from the bud. Enough. That was January 30. And this is more than 2 months and 21 days ago, close to 3 months now.
Meanwhile, protesters continue to demand the economy, closed by the fight against the coronavirus, reopen, even as health authorities say the shutdown must continue at least through May. The executive director of the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Program is Dr. Mike Ryan. He says opposition to quarantines and lockdowns to fight disease is nothing new, but how people respond is a measure of trust in their government.
One of the keys to epidemic control or emergency management in general is the level of trust between citizens and government. It's a hugely important investment in the bank of emergency response. Because when you ask people to do something on trust and to end their social life, end physical contact, return to their homes, they have to fundamentally believe that somebody has a plan. There's a reason for this. And there's a reason for doing it, and there will be an end to this. And it's the same when you ask someone in the Democratic Republic of Congo to go into an Ebola isolation facility or ask their families to self-quarantine. Very similar situation. And there can be misunderstandings in real time if communities don't understand the purpose. But also, and we've seen this in Congo, where communities can be gamed and have been, in many cases, in my experience, there are what are genuine community concerns, if not properly addressed, can lead to tension and lead to misunderstanding and often to negative reactions, which are counterproductive to the control of the epidemic. But also there are many situations in which those reactions and community sentiments are gamed and directed in a way that is counterproductive. And I've certainly seen that in many epidemic events in my time as well.
The WHO has worked with the United States and other nations, not only in combating coronavirus, but other diseases. One of the most feared, the crippling disease polio, eradicated in the United States, but still a threat in Iraq, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. Meanwhile, deaths from the pandemic in Latin America continue to increase, with Brazil, Ecuador, and Chile being the countries most affected by the virus. In Brazil, where the president of the country recently fired his health chief and declared prayer was enough to stop the disease, deaths topped 2,300. Chile, already in the grips of civil unrest, reported 126 deaths. But Ecuador has some of the most disturbing stories. A new president, Lenin Moreno, did little to battle the outbreak in its early stages. Soon, fearful mortuary workers were refusing to pick up the dead for fear of contracting COVID-19, with reports of dead bodies in the street. The former Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ecuador is Guillaume Long. He says Moreno has turned his back on Ecuador's people.
We started having dead bodies in the streets, and hundreds of them, you know, not just a few, as a consequence of the coronavirus crisis, but also as a consequence of an indirect consequence of the coronavirus crisis, which was the fear factor. A number of funeral parlors closed their doors down. They shut, you know, stopped attending people who needed to bury their loved ones because of fear of being infected by coronavirus. And instead of having a state who, you know, did not allow that to happen, or who, you know, you would expect the state to intervene and say, no, wait a minute, we need, you know, funeral parlors to be open, private funeral parlors to be open. The state just, you know, it being a very neoliberal government, sort of adopted this kind of pro-market, laissez-faire, didn't get involved until it was too late. And then it got involved, designated a task force. It's just buried about 800 bodies that were unattended. But by that time, you had not just a coronavirus crisis, but a mortuary crisis, which is what essentially happened in Guayaquil, Ecuador's second largest city, a big urban hub. Yeah, a big drama, a big crisis there.
And what does this tell us about this neoliberal policy that's come over Ecuador.
Moreno was Correa's, what used to be Correa's vice president, and he was elected on the ticket for continuity from the same party. But within a few weeks, he basically did a massive U-turn, started persecuting Correa and all the members of his cabinet, implemented very aggressive neoliberal structural adjustment programs, aligned with the U.S., handed over Assange, closed down UNASUR, opened a U.S. military, not base, but certainly airstrip in the Galapagos Islands, a major, major U-turn, one of the few case studies, you know, textbook examples of a political treason on the grand scale.
What did Ecuador get for that?
Well, we have a few hypotheses. My main one is that there's a major corruption case hanging over President Moreno's head. He knows that the day he ceases to be president, which is May 24th next year, he's going to have to face the justice system, which he controls right now. Charges haven't been able to be brought forward. But after May 24th, 2021, he will not control the judiciary, and he's likely to be tried for this. So I think he's made a deal. I think he'll end up coming over to the U.S. And I think there's a shopping list of items he needs to do, check them one by one before he's allowed to be protected. I mean, it may be a bit crude, but essentially that's my hypothesis. Yeah.
What is going to happen to the people of Ecuador who are suffering this COVID, the worst outbreak in Latin America? What's happening to them?
The COVID crisis is particularly bad in Ecuador for a number of reasons. And one of them is obviously this kind of neoliberal U-turn accompanied by the IMF, it should be said, which has played a very important role of entrenching austerity again in Latin America, and in this case in Ecuador. So you've had major cuts to the health sector, with about 10% of health workers being laid off, a massive reduction in investment in health. And so basically, Ecuador is very ill prepared right now. And there are macroeconomic effects of this crisis, which are having a very heavy toll on Ecuador. Ecuador's main export is oil. Well, we know what happened to the oil prices over the last few days. So Ecuador is in a very bad situation right now to face this crisis. For the people of Ecuador, it's a very tragic situation.
How do you think this is going to play out for the Ecuadorian people?
It's very difficult to tell. I'm not very optimistic. I think the next few months are going to be more suffering. Let's hope that the elections of February next year bring some more reasonable, some more competent, and some more people-friendly governance to Ecuador.
According to the Ecuadorian Ministry of Public Health, there are nearly 8,500 cases in the country and 731 probable from the coronavirus. And you're listening to the news in New York on WBAI and on WPFW in Washington, D.C. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In national news, dozens of protesters converged on the state capitol in Albany during Governor Andrew Cuomo's daily coronavirus briefing to demand the reopening of New York, closed by the worst outbreak of the pandemic in the nation. Cuomo slammed the protesters, saying they were selfishly putting their own interests ahead of others.
Economic hardship. Yes, very bad. Not death. Emotional stress from being locked in a house. Very bad. Not death. Domestic violence on the increase. Very bad. Not death. And not death of someone else. See, that's what we have to factor into this equation. Yeah, it's your life. Do whatever you want. But you're now responsible for my life. You have a responsibility to me. It's not just about you. So it's not all about you. It's about me too. It's about we. And think about it as if it was your family that might get infected, right? And that's what we're talking about. And when you think about it as your family, you have a different perspective. I'll tell you the truth. It's not an abstract argument. Well, they say, he says, she says, he says, she says. I know that's how it works. Well, the protesters say this, governor says this, protesters say this, governor says this. Okay, think about it as your family might be in the mix. Because when I see 484 New Yorkers die, I feel that it's like people in my family. And nothing comes before the public health risk of somebody else's life.
A poll released by the Associated Press finds Americans remain overwhelmingly in favor of stay-at-home orders and other efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus. A significant majority say it won't be safe to lift such restrictions anytime soon. The poll found only a small fraction of Americans sympathetic with protests that materialized recently in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. More than 45,000 people in the United States have died from COVID-19, while 22 million have applied for unemployment benefits since March. And Governor Cuomo also warned New Yorkers that although the curve is flattening, it's still too early to ease up on restrictions. He says past epidemics had second and third waves of infection.
If you look at any of the facts, the 1918 flu, they're talking about it now. There can be waves to this, right? You walk out into the ocean, you get hit with that first wave. Oh, great. I'm done. The wave hit me. I'm still standing. Beware, because there can be a second wave, or there could be a third wave. So don't be cocky just because you got hit by a wave and it didn't knock you off your feet. There can be a second wave. And if you're not ready for the second wave, that's the wave that's going to knock you down because you're not ready for it. So that's what I'm worried about.
Cuomo showed a graph of the 1918 flu pandemic that hit the United States after World War I. In that outbreak, there were three waves of the disease that killed tens of thousands in the U.S. alone over 8 months. And in local news, the New York City Council came together today with its first remote stated meeting in its 82-year history to pass legislation to help New York City residents and workers during the pandemic. Linda Perry reports.
In the first meeting since the outbreak of the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic, New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson acknowledged the total devastation and unfathomable loss of life, with more than 14,000 lost in our city in the last few weeks. Johnson says words just can't express how devastating this is.
Sadly, this crisis has also highlighted structural, racial, and income inequalities that already existed in our city, but are more glaring now than ever. And as with so many public health problems in New York, communities of color and immigrants make up a disproportionate number of COVID cases and deaths. This is unacceptable, and we need to make sure these communities get the resources they need for health care and recovery. We remember the lives lost to this disease and the families that have been left behind. The New York City Council is united with each and every one of them. We will keep fighting to ensure that New Yorkers have the resources they need during this crisis and that we adequately plan for our future.
Today, the New York City Council voted on several affordable housing items, a COVID relief package that extends time for tenants to repay rent and pay back debts, new protections from harassment for commercial and residential tenants, and a New York City Essential Workers Bill of Rights. This provides essential workers with rights and protections as they work to keep New Yorkers fed, moving, supplied, and cared for during the COVID-19 pandemic. Again, Speaker Johnson.
This package will require large employers to pay premiums to certain essential non-salaried workers. It will prohibit all hiring parties of essential workers from firing those without a just cause during this state of emergency that we're in. It will extend paid sick leave to independent contractors and gig workers, and it will urge the state to put the burden of proof on employers to classify workers as independent contractors. So this is about protecting these workers who are heroes, not just through our words, which are important, or through the wonderful thing that happens every at night at 7 p.m., where I love that New Yorkers do that. But this is about giving people rights and giving people the pay that they need and the protections that they need to get through this crisis. That's what this is about.
And the city council is looking at a bill to pedestrianize up to 75 miles of city streets, a bill New York City's mayor opposes, but a bill which may become law anyway, as the city seeks to provide spaces to New New Yorkers for Social Distancing in a city struck hard by the pandemic. As warm weather approaches and the need to get out becomes stronger and stronger each day. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
And finally, as governments around the world struggle to face an economic disaster caused by the COVID-19 outbreak, Peru's coca farmers, who grow the bushy plant used to make cocaine, say they want help too. Prices for coca leaves sold to drug organizations have slumped 70% since Peru went on lockdown last month, and traffickers are now struggling to move their product. In Peru, coca is legal but highly regulated. Now the head of a local growers organization says he wants the government to help. Officials say they're looking at plans to funnel more development aid to the coca-growing regions of the country. Meanwhile, the price of methamphetamine has tripled as a source of chemicals used to make the drug has dried up. That's up the news for Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.